Jesus' disciples were with him. You can see chapter 17 of Matthew, verse 10. And so when they came to the crowd, verse 14, and they, meaning Jesus and his disciples, when they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." "O unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed from that moment. When the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" he replied, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." When they came together in Galilee, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life." Now, the reason we mention all of this stuff together in this context, it looks like we have two different contexts. But I want you to notice something before we get into the exact subject here. I want you to start with me again in verse 10, and I want you to compare verse 10 and 11 through 12 before we start the context of the healing of the boy with a demon, and to where we end in verse 22. I want you to notice that this subject of the healing of the boy with the demon is encapsulated between two parts that say the same thing. That lets you know about the context. And this is one of the difficulties people have in reading the scripture and getting the point of what Jesus is saying. Because some of the questions we want to answer here in this subject is, why did Jesus call them an unbelieving and perverse generation? Why did he say, how long I shall stay with you? Shall I stay with you? How long will I put up with you? Why did Jesus tell them about the faith of the mustard seed here, as small as a mustard seed? What is the point he's trying to make to them? Why did he tell them, the things that he told him? All right, I'm going to show you these two sections that encapsulate the story. And I want you to tell me. Let me start again in verse 10. The disciples asked him, "Why do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come." And they did not recognize him. They did not recognize him. This is important. Remember that. "And have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Then the disciples understood that he was talking about John the Baptist. Then we get to the healing with the boy with the demon. And then we end it with this. When he came together in Galilee, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life." And the disciples were filled with grief. Now, do you see the same context in chapter 17, verse 10 through 12, and chapter 17, verse 22, where it ends? Both of them speak of Jesus being betrayed. Both of them speak of not recognizing what's going on. Let me read it for you again. See if you see those two factors. "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come?" Verse 10. Verse 11. "To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things, but I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but had done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Verse 22. At the end of this story. "When they came together in Galilee, he said to them, 'The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life.'" Do you see the comparison? Do you see what starts this context and what ends this context? Why is the story of the boy being delivered of the demon surrounded in this context? About one, not recognizing what God has ordained, and two, about Jesus will suffer and be put to death. That context is before and after this story about the boy with the demon. Is this true or not true? So the story is encapsulated within that context. How many of you see it? The story is encapsulated within that context. Do you see it? Yes or no? Hello, hello, hello. Not yet. All right. Is there a reason? Well, put it this way, Becky. Is there a reason? He's talking to the disciples. All right. The thing that Jesus, one of the things that Jesus, let's just say this overall, not just in chapter 17 here, but throughout the New Testament, throughout the Gospels, Jesus told them over and over again that he was going to be betrayed into the hands of sinners and the chief priests, and that they were going to kill him, and on the third day he was going to rise from the dead. And they didn't ever hold that revelation, did they? He told them over and over again, and still when it happened, they were surprised. In fact, after he was put to death, they didn't believe that he had risen from the dead, even though he'd been telling this all the way through. Well, when Jesus gets to this point where he's going to heal this boy, notice that the first thing he tells his disciples before they get to that section with the boy is that, you know, John the Baptist wasn't recognized when he came, and they've done to him what they were supposed to do, you know. They've done to him everything they wished. They killed him. And in the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. So he speaks of his death, and this is something, a revelation they still haven't discerned. True or not true? This is a revelation that the disciples still haven't discerned, much in the same way they did not recognize that John the Baptist was Elijah. They did not understand that Jesus as the Messiah must be put to death. All right, then we get to the thing where he healed the boy with the demon. And then the last thing he says, when they came together in Galilee, verse 22, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised alive." So this story is encapsulated, the story of the boy with the demon, is encapsulated between these two statements. In the same way the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands, that starts it, and it ends with, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he'll be raised to life." So can you see the story of this, in this happening, in this context, in this episode? Before they arrive to the boy, Jesus tells him he's going to suffer and be put to death. And after they leave the boy, Jesus tells him that he's going to suffer and be put to death. Do y'all see that? It's pretty simple. So the story of this boy is encapsulated between these two things, before they arrive to the boy and after they leave the boy. Well, can you see that this is all part of the same context? Because it's all part of the same trip. Starts in verse 9, "As they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus instructed them, 'Don't tell anyone what you've seen,'" the Mount of Transfiguration, "'until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead.' Then the disciples asked him, 'Then why then do the teachers say that Elijah must come first?' 'To be sure Elijah comes and will restore all things,' Jesus says. 'But I tell you, Elijah's already come, and they did not recognize him, and have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to sever their hands.' Then the disciples understood that he was talking about John the Baptist. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. And this is where we get into the boy. Now, so Jesus tells them before they arrive at the boy, and then after they have left the boy, he ends after, when he's still there with the boy, he says, If you have the faith of a grain of mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from there to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Then when they came together in Galilee, he said to them, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed. So, this episode is all the same episode, because it's the same trip. They come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, James, John, and Peter, who were there with him, and they joined the other disciples who were down there with that crowd of people, and they had tried to heal that boy, and they couldn't heal him. It's all the same episode. Then Jesus heals the boy, and then after that, he gives them instructions of why they couldn't, and then when they came together in Galilee, then he told them the same thing that he told them before they arrived at the boy. See, it's all one episode. So the story of the boy, what happened to the boy, is encapsulated between these two understandings, and it gives you a context. So there is something about this healing of the boy with the demon that has to do with the context of these two things. It's like bookmarks. It's like bookends. Jesus' statement about his suffering is one bookend. Jesus' statement about his suffering, death, and resurrection is the other bookend. As a matter of fact, they're both statements about his death and resurrection. He says, don't tell anyone you've seen on the Mount of Transfiguration until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. And then he goes on to say that they killed John, and they will make me suffer too. Then what does he say? I'm going to be killed and be raised to life on the third day. So everybody can see that now, right? That the story of this boy is encapsulated between these two statements of Jesus. There's a reason for that, and it is all one context. So what is? And you see two facets here. One, them not recognizing. Now, I mean, the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter, James, and John got to go with him, and they got a revelation about who Jesus really is when he shone in his glory, right? That was a revelation. Front row seat, amen. But they couldn't hold it, could they? Because they're still not getting it. Jesus, in fact, had been with all of his disciples doing all these wonderful things. And Jesus gets on to him about not getting it still. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. Lord, have mercy on my son, he said. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation, Jesus replied. How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. I get goosebumps when I hear this. Can you see that there is an expectancy, especially through this great revelation from Peter, James, and John, but through all that Jesus has done, there is an expectancy on Jesus' part that they recognize him. There was an expectancy for them to recognize who John the Baptist was too. And they weren't getting it. The fact that they could not discern the problem with delivering this demon is part of that expectancy. Jesus expects them to understand more than their understanding. Is that clear from the context? Now, I want you to notice one statement that ties them both together. This beginning, I'm going to suffer. They're going to make me suffer like they did John. Don't say anything about this revelation until I raise from the dead, which means I'm going to die, right? And what they did to John, they're going to do to me. And the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they'll kill him, and he'll rise on the third day. See, these two subjects. Well, there's one thing in the story of the healing with the boy with the demon that connects these two things in the same context. Listen to it. Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation, Jesus said, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. Can you see in the statement, how long shall I be with you? Is a reference to what he said before and after this episode. Same exact subject, huh? How long shall I be with you? It shows that expectancy, doesn't it? It shows that he expects them to get more than they're getting. And it also shows that Jesus knows he's going to die. How long shall I be with you? Now, does that statement connect what he said before this incident and what he said after this incident or not? Does that statement of how long shall I be with you connect what he said before this episode and what he said after this episode? It does, doesn't it? So you see, there is a context here about understanding and discerning who Jesus is. Because, and discerning, see, there's a chain of evidence here. You've got to be able to discern who Jesus is in order to discern what God's will is, in order to be able to stand in faith. There's a chain there, isn't it? Can you see all three of these elements here? To understand, to deliver the demon out of this boy, or any other thing you're going to do, any other thing that you're going to do according to faith, you've got to discern who Jesus is, and therefore by that discern what God's will is in the situation. Let me ask you a question. Let's prove the point. If they could have discerned that John the Baptist was Elijah, would they have known that John the Baptist was going to be put to death? If they could have discerned that John the Baptist was indeed Elijah, could they have discerned that he was going to be put to death? Yes, because the scriptures say. So if they can discern that Jesus is the Messiah, could they have discerned that Jesus is going to be put to death? Because it is God's will to bruise him for our iniquities. It is God's will for him to suffer, for with his stripes we are healed. It is God's will to afflict him and to lay the sin of us all upon his shoulders. It's right there in Isaiah 53. The scriptures speak plainly of what the Messiah, what must happen. So if you can discern that Jesus is the Messiah, then you can discern three things here. That he's going to suffer, that he's going to be put to death, and he's going to rise from the dead. Ooh. So, the context of his statement, how long shall I be with you, fits exactly, doesn't it? So, now let's go and examine it. With this knowledge, now, of this order, discerning the identity of Jesus in order to be able to discern God's will, in order to be able to stand in faith. Y'all see that pattern? O unbelieving and perverse generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible to you. That faith was based upon knowing God's will. And God knowing God's will was based upon discerning who Jesus was. In other words, who had empowered them to do this. And because they weren't making that chain of evidence, because it was not clear to them, they had no idea what they were dealing with. And let me show you one of the reasons that they didn't get it. And this is the reasons a lot of Christians right here don't get it. Okay? Because you have so little faith, I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible to you. Remember what we talked about, small as a mustard seed. It's not about having a little bit of faith. That was never the point about the mustard seed. Remember what it says about the mustard seed. The mustard seed, Jesus told in a parable, is a seed that is the smallest of all seeds. It's small. Yet, when it's planted, it becomes the greatest of all garden plants, that even the birds nest in its branches. Isn't that true? How many of you remember that parable that Jesus said elsewhere about the mustard seed? So this isn't about it just being a small seed. It's about Jesus. Jesus is the mustard seed, and he had to be planted. Jesus made himself nothing, which means he humbled himself, even unto death, which is in this context here. The same way the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life. In other words, the mustard seed will be planted in the earth, and it will grow to be a branch to where even the largest of all garden plants, to where even the birds of the air nest in its branches. Remember where Jesus told Nathanael in John chapter 1? You believe just because I said I saw you under the fig tree? I tell you the truth, you'll see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. That's comparable to the birds nesting in its branches. Jesus is the mustard seed. And it's not about having a small amount of faith. It's about Jesus making himself nothing. And the key to discerning Jesus' identity, and therefore, by discerning his identity, discerning God's will, but by discerning God's will to have faith, the key is to make yourself nothing, to have the faith of a grain of mustard seed. To make yourself nothing. See, what the last will be first, and the first will be last. Whatever exalts itself, God humbles. Whatever humbles itself, God exalts. The mustard seed is the smallest of all seeds. He makes himself nothing. But when he's planted, like Jesus was in the tomb, he grows to be the biggest of all the plants. Right? And that's you too. So in this context, there is the natural pattern of you dying with Christ, being put to death with Christ, humbling yourself and making yourself nothing, so that you can rise with Christ. And to have faith of that magnitude, it must be according to that pattern. Isn't that true? Because in order to share in Jesus' glory, and therefore his power, you must share with him in his suffering. See, it's at this point the disciples were still arguing about who would be the greatest among them. And this shows us something very important. The faith you operate in directly has to do with who you discern Jesus is, and who you discern you are. And if you think more of yourself than you ought to, then you have not followed Jesus' example. And if you, therefore, you don't really understand that Jesus is your master, you haven't discerned who he is. And if you haven't discerned who he is, you'll never discern what God's will is in the situation. And you'll never be able to have faith in order to see the things done. Now, all of this is in that context, if you look. Is it there or not? So the first part. Now, can you picture these disciples while James, John, and Peter went up with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration? While they were gone, you see these disciples that were down below trying to cast this out. Trying to play apostle, and they couldn't do it. Why? Why did they not have the faith? As Jesus told them, they didn't. Because they still... You see how this corresponds with, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I be with you? And their not believing is directly accorded to the fact that they didn't know who he was. They still didn't get it. The identity of Jesus had to be first for them to know God's will. See, if they'd have identified Jesus as the Messiah and that he had to die, then they would know what God's will is, that he die. And they would also know that whatever Jesus asked would be done. And they would also know, by extension, whatever we ask in Jesus' name will be done. They would know that. And you know what that is? Faith that's based on evidence. I know who my master is. I know whom I serve. I know it's not my power. And I know that he is Messiah, and that whatever I ask in his name, as he told me, would be done. I know, therefore, whatever I ask according to his will be done. Would Jesus have given them the power if it wasn't God's will for it to be done? Can you see? There's a whole host of things here. It's never been about blind faith. Faith is always based upon something. There's a reason always to believe or not believe. And their lack of faith goes directly that they did not know who Jesus was. Can y'all see that? Oh. Now let me finish this off. The only way that you can truly know who Jesus is, to share with him in his life and his power, is to share with him in his suffering and death first. That means faith of a grain of mustard seed. That means humbling yourself unto death. In order to live with Christ and to walk in his power through faith, you have to count yourself dead with him first. Anybody who knows that Jesus is the Messiah, in order to identify with Jesus as the Messiah, you must identify with him in his suffering before you can identify him with in his power. You must identify him with in his death before you can be identified in his life. That's the place of miracles. And that's all here, isn't it? Isn't it? Discerning who Jesus is, identifying with him, the faith of a grain of mustard seed, making yourself nothing, that God can be everything, and therefore God is glorified in you as he is in Jesus. See? And that's where your faith comes from. Get it? And if you go through the New Testament Gospels here, you'll see that everybody that received something were people who knew their station in life, and they perceived who Jesus was. Remember the centurion who was a Gentile, and Jesus said, I haven't seen so great a faith in all of Israel. What is it that he noticed about Jesus? He goes, Jesus, I'm not worthy for you to come into my house. But I know that you don't have to. I'm a man of authority. If I tell a man go, he goes. And if I say tell a man stay, he stays. I don't have to see him do it. And I recognize, Jesus, you're a man of authority. Hello? All you have to do is say it, and it'll be done. And Jesus said, I haven't seen so great a faith in all of Israel. Go, it says, as you said. See, that man made himself nothing and acknowledged the authority of the Messiah, didn't he? He discerned who Jesus was. And therefore, he knew if he asked him, he would receive what was asked because he knew Jesus had the power to do it. That's exactly what I'm talking about, isn't it? Discerning who Jesus is. In order to be able to discern God's will, in order to be able to stand in faith. Same pattern. You'll find that anyone who received a miracle in the Bible received it along these lines. The woman who pushed through the crowd, she knew that she had to get to Jesus. That is acknowledging who he is. And she knew that's all she had to do, that he was the answer. That's acknowledging who he is, isn't it? That's discerning who he is. And there, by discerning who he is, you can discern what God's will is. And therefore have faith. You want to see the things change in your life? That's the pattern. Discern truly who Jesus is, not just a story. Discern who he is. By discerning who it is, you will be plugged into what God's will is. Jesus is the very pattern of what God's will is for you. Faith of a grain of mustard seed, humble yourself. Make yourself nothing. Make God everything. And if you can discern who Jesus truly is, then you can discern God's will. And therefore you can stand in faith. And whatever you ask according to those first two revelations who Jesus is and God's will be done. It's a fact. Can you all see this? And it's hidden from carnal eyes. It's right all here in the text. This very order is right here in the text. And people miss this every day. Because they don't read it with the eyes of understanding. The very same people did not recognize that John the Baptist was Elijah. And they didn't recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. And you know, and this shows something else. You can talk all day long about what a great Christian you are and how much faith you've got. But you know what? You're never going to fool a demon if it isn't true. Yes. Get discernment. The Bible tells you to get discernment. How else can you get it? Amen. But the point is, you know, if you're going to deal with spirits, things you cannot see, things you're dealing with in faith, you're not going to fool a demon . He knows when he has to go and when he don't . He knows whether he's dealing with the authority of God or the authority of just some man of flesh, some wannabe. Demon knows that. You understand? He knows that. Remember where it tells this story? And another way this story is told, this kind can only be driven out by prayer and fasting. Remember that's the other version of the story? It's the same thing. What's the prayer and fasting for? It's not about casting out the demon. The prayer and fasting is about you discerning Jesus' identity and God's will. And therefore, where you belong in that. So that you can stand in faith. That's what the prayer and fasting is for. Prayer and fasting is not about God driving out the demon. The prayer and fasting is about you discerning what it is you're dealing with and who it is you're dealing with. And who you're dealing with first is Christ. You see that? But when people read that, though, couple, they think that the prayer and fasting is about driving out the demon, don't they? They don't get it. It's about realizing the very pattern that we've seen here, isn't it? So, can y'all see this clearly? This pattern here? Discerning the identity of Jesus in order to know God's will, in order to stand in faith. You must humble yourself for that to happen. That's the pattern. You want to see miracles? That's how it works. It's a good place to stop.